Chapter 7, Tabby and Rush.
Mom's being a total bitch!
Tack's daughter cried again, approximately a second after she cleared the door. I stared at her. She had Tack's hair, except long, its glorious waves cascading down her back, well past her bra strap. She also had his sapphire blue eyes. Hers were flashing because she was pissed way the hell off. She was petite and slim, but rounded, wearing jean shorts, a sweet Harley Davidson tee, and flip-flops. Her blemishless skin, every inch of it, was tanned a beautiful brown. She was a teenage knockout, and she was pacing with extreme teenage girl agitation.
She is dead, totally,
Tack's son stated, and I moved my stare to him. He was near to the spitting image of his father, the same height, though Tack's son didn't have the muscled bulk of his father. But that didn't mean he didn't have a lean, sculpted body. Like his sister, he had his dad's hair and olive skin tone. He was wearing his dad's uniform of faded, fitting-too-well-for-peace-of-mind jeans, motorcycle boots, and t-shirt. His announcing he was a fan of Blackstone Cherry. He didn't have the goatee, and he had his mother's light blue eyes, but other than that, Tack was written all over him. Unlike his sister, he wasn't pacing. He was standing, his hands on his hips, but he looked angry, if not as angry as his sister.
This isn't something you both don't know,
Tack's voice rumbled into the room. The girl whirled to face her dad, and leaning in, she declared,
All right, then she's being more than the total bitch she normally is.
No joke, the boy put in. She's all over Tab like a rash.
Why? Tack asked.
Because she's a bitch,
the girl asked back.
I need more than that, Tabby,
Tack told her.
She took the keys to Tab's car and grounded her and swear, Dad, totally swear, there's no reason,
the boy informed Tack, and Tack's gaze went from his son to his daughter.
Is there no reason, Tabby?
He asked. The way Tack asked that, it seemed maybe Tabby was a bit of a wild one.
You know I'll tell you like it is, Dad, but Rush is right. She's off on one, and again, because she's a total freaking nutcase. She's taking it out on me,
Tabby said. My eyes slid to Tack to see his jaw was clenched. Tabby kept talking.
I can't live with this shit anymore. I kid you not, no more. I never know when she's gonna blow or freak out about something or get in my face or whatever. And that douchebag of a husband of hers, he gets in on the act.
How?
Tack barked. He said that one word so forcefully, so abruptly, and so angrily, it startled me so much I jumped. Both Tack's kids went still, and their demeanor instantly turned cautious.
He's just a dick, Dad, you know that, the boy said quietly and carefully. How's he a dick, Rush?
Tack asked curtly, only a slim edge of patience in his tone. Rush and Tabby looked at each other, then back to Tack.
He's the one who took my keys,
Tabby stated softly.
Says I don't pull it together, he's gonna sell my car.
I held my breath when Tack's scary biker dude vibe filled the air again, but Tabby went on.
The problem with that is I don't know what I gotta pull together because I didn't do anything wrong.
He just wants to sell her car because he's a lazy fuck,
Rush muttered under his breath, eyeing his father, who was at that very moment yanking his phone out of his back pocket.
Dad,
Tabby started.
Quiet,
Tack ordered, beeping buttons on his phone.
I want to live with you,
she ignored him in order to continue.
And just to say, I'll lose my freaking mind, that douche sells my car.
Tack put his phone to his ear and scowled at his daughter. What he didn't do was reply to her. Instead, he spoke into the phone.
Shut your fucking mouth,
he growled into the phone. I held my breath again at his vicious tone, and he went on.
That shithead thinks to sell my girl's car because he's a lazy-ass motherfucker and can't pull his finger out to get himself a fucking job. He buys himself trouble. And I'm warning you, Naomi, it's trouble you don't want to have. I gave Tabby that car. That car belongs to her. It don't belong to you, and it sure as fuck don't belong to him. You get his shit sorted, and you get your shit sorted, and you do not use my kids to sort it. Are we clear?
He listened for approximately 2.5 seconds, then went on.
Bullshit, he bit out. I hear you, or him, talk that way about Tab again. Swear to Christ, Naomi, both your asses are in front of the judge. Do not use my daughter to work out your shit. Your life ain't what you wanted it to be. That ain't Tabby's problem. It ain't Rush's problem, and it ain't my problem. I'm sick of your games, and I'm done playing them. You stop this shit, Naomi, or honest to God, I'll make you wish you never started it, and I'll be creative in how I do that. Now, are we clear?
He listened this time for approximately 0.5 seconds before he carried on.
I don't want to hear your shit. I asked you a question. Are we clear? There are two answers to that, woman, but only one smart one.
There was a pause, then scarily,
that wasn't the smart one. Kiss your kids goodbye.
Then he disconnected, shoved his phone in his back pocket, and his eyes sliced through his children. Then he asked,
you guys have lunch?
No, Rush answered.
Right, then you're going for a sandwich with me and Tyra,
Tack announced. My lungs seized, and I felt my eyes get wide.
Tyra?
Tabby whispered, then both kids turned their heads and looked at me for the first time. Oh boy.
Hey!
I greeted. Tabby looked me up and down. So did Rush. Their looks couldn't have been any more different. Then Tabby grinned. So did Rush. Their grins also couldn't have been any more different.
Sweet shoes, Tabby told me.
Thanks, I replied.
Shoes? Rush muttered. Didn't get that far. The skirts burned on my brain.
My eyes moved to Tack to see now he was grinning. Tabby looked at her father.
This your new woman that Mom's in a tizzy about?
Tack didn't answer. Rush did.
Duh, Tab, you saw her skirt.
Tabby looked back at me and grinned, murmuring.
Right.
Then she informed me.
Tyra's a cool name.
Thanks, I said. Is, your name Tabitha?
Totally,
she replied. That's a pretty name too, I told her.
I hate my name. Mom gave me my name and I hate my mom because she's a total bitch,
she replied. I couldn't argue with that and I couldn't agree with it. I also couldn't make myself vanish in a puff of smoke and reappear in Siberia even though I was using every fiber of my being to try. Since my body wouldn't disappear in a puff of smoke and a response was required, I said,
well, once a gift is given, no matter how you feel about the person giving it, it's yours.
And even though you're angry at your mom now, she still gave you a pretty name. So you shouldn't think about her giving it to you. You should just think of owning it. You do, so, own it.
Dig it,
was Tabby's response made through a widening smile.
I'm Rush,
Rush stated.
My name's Cole, but no one calls me that. They call me Rush.
Hey, Rush,
I said to him.
He's always in a rush, Tabby explained. Dad says even when he was a baby, the minute he could crawl, he was rushing everywhere. And it's the God's honest truth, let me tell you. And he's got the speeding tickets now to prove it.
You should probably maybe, check that impulse when you're behind the wheel of a car, I advised Rush. Speeding tickets are expensive.
No shit. Rush grinned at me. You guys gonna shoot the shit with Tyra for the next 4 hours or are we gonna get a sandwich?
Tack cut in to ask. Tabby jumped up and down twice, turning toward her father, shouting,
sandwich!
I want enchiladas, Rush declared. I'll make fajitas tonight for dinner,
Tack told his son, and I stared at him. The idea of rough-and-ready biker guy, Tack in a kitchen cooking, was something my mind violently wanted to expunge, but it couldn't because he'd said it.
Rock on!
Tabby exclaimed, throwing both her arms in the air, fingers extended in devil's horns. Then she whirled to me and dropped her arms.
You had Dad's fajitas, Tyra?
No, I answered.
Get ready to have your world rocked, Rush stated. Dad's fajitas are the shit.
I actually can't make dinner, I started. All eyes, including Tax, locked on me, and Tax, I noticed, looked annoyed for reasons unknown, since he hadn't actually asked me to dinner. I have a ritual that I never miss on Thursdays.
What's that?
Tabby inquired, her head tilting to the side. Thursday takeaway, I told her.
Thursday takeaway?
Rush asked. Yeah, I answered. Tonight I'm doing Imperial Chinese. I've been looking forward to it since last Thursday.
Babe, you so totally don't want to miss Dad's fajitas. Imperial is sweet, but Dad's fajitas rock,
Tabby declared.
Seriously, Rush added.
Red, get your purse, Tack ordered.
Actually, I already had lunch, so you just go on without me.
I jerked my head to the door and smiled at Tabby and Rush.
But it was cool meeting you.
Babe, get your purse,
Tack repeated with a slight modification. My eyes moved to him and I said quietly,
Tack, I have work to get done.
Get your purse.
But
purse.
I...
purse.
I don't...
He bent a bit at the waist in my direction.
Purse.
I finally snapped.
Tack!
Jesus!
He muttered, then moved while speaking, and where he moved was toward me.
You're not paying anyway, so you don't need your fucking purse.
I had moved several inches away from the wall, but I pinned myself against it again, now willing my body to dissolve through the wall, but this also failed. I was in this position for approximately 1.5 seconds before Tack's strong hand curled around mine. He yanked me from the wall, then he dragged me across the room, then he dragged me through his children. He then dragged me out of the office and down the steps where he stopped me on the passenger side of a very cool, shiny black car.
Keys,
he called, lifted his hand, tagged a set of keys Rush sent sailing through the air, then he ordered,
you two in back, Tyra's shotgun, I'm driving.
He unlocked the door and used my hand in a forceful, not-to-be-denied way, where I had no choice but to plant my ass in the passenger seat. The minute my feet hit the floor, he threw the door to and rounded the hood. He opened his door, both his kids scrunched into the back, and Tack folded behind the wheel. I stared at the door to the office thinking, guess I'm getting sandwiches with Tack and his kids. Yikes. Tack turned the ignition. The car's engine growled in a totally kick-ass way, and with no other choice, I twisted and grabbed the seatbelt. Chapter 8. Open. I sat tucked in the corner of my couch, my knees up, heels to the seat, plate wedged between my thighs and torso, and I ate Tack's fajitas, which, just as Tabby said, rocked. This was after I sat sipping a diet while Tack and his kids had sandwiches, chips, and pops, with Rush eating two huge chocolate chip cookies on top of that. Through this, Rush sometimes spoke. Tack sometimes interjected. I said a few words here and there, but mostly Tabby chattered away, completely over her drama. She was talkative, animated, smart, charming, and funny. This was the way she was, but it was also the way she was around her father and brother, both of whom clearly adored her so she could safely blossom under their adoration, and she did. This was also something I didn't need. Rush, the eldest at 17, nearly 18, Tabby just turned 16, upon which Tack gave her a car, the same as he did for Rush. This I learned while Tabby chattered away. I could see as he was her big brother. Tack, since he was her father and she was his only daughter, I could also see, but that didn't mean I wanted to see it. Badass biker Tack, smiling at, teasing, and openly adoring his daughter, was something I definitely didn't want to see. One could say the messages Tack had been giving me since I met him were most assuredly mixed. One could also say the personalities Tack had been displaying since I met him were most assuredly multiple. I wanted to focus on the bad messages and scary or annoying personality traits. Tack being a loving father, close to both of his kids, openly respecting his son, and definitely being daddy to his little girl, were neither of those. Fajitas on my couch were also after Tack took his kids and me back to ride, where Tabby hung out in the office with me and Rush worked on the red car in the garage with Tack. Tabby was just as talkative, animated, smart, charming, and funny with me alone as she was with her brother and father there. This meant I got zero work done, and also was unable to return any of Lainey's texts, all of them getting increasingly demanding that I inform her immediately that I gave notice. I did manage to send off an, I'm busy, got someone in my office text, which finally quieted her down, but only after she ordered me to text her the minute I gave Tack my resignation letter. Tabby in my office also made it impossible for me to avoid fajitas. It was impossible because at 5 to 5, Tack stuck his head through the door that led to the garage, his eyes hit me, and he stated,
Tab's with you, babe, Rush and I'll follow, I'm on my bike. Rush and I'll go to the store to pick up the shit. You take Tab to rent a movie and we'll meet at your house.
The 10,000 words all rushing up my throat got jumbled and clogged on their way to my lips, so I only got the chance to open my mouth before he disappeared behind the closed door, and Tabby cried,
"Awesome! Let's rent Saw! That movie kicks ass!"
I didn't have the heart to tell her I had no interest in renting Saw, nor did I have the heart to tell her I wasn't all fired up to have her dad make fajitas at my house for his kids, and apparently me. What I did have was the desire to find her father and then find a way to explain to him that he was a big jerk. I wasn't playing his games, and no matter how he told me to feel, he scared the freaking hell out of me and I wanted no part of it. Since I couldn't do the last, I closed down the office, loaded Tabby in my car, we rented Saw. I took her to my house where I immediately opened a chilled bottle of white wine and got her a diet. She wandered my house, declaring it was the shit, and I changed out of my skirt, blouse, and heels into a pair of cut-off jean shorts and a camisole. We were out the back door off the kitchen and on the back deck when Tabby heard the growl of her brother's car and the roar of Tack's Harley. She popped out of her seat, raced into the house, and I heard her greeting her family with loud exuberance at the door, shouting,
"Rush, wait till you see Tyra's pad, it's a shit! Her back deck is freaking awesome!"
I closed my eyes and lamented for the 55th time since I buckled my seatbelt in Rush's car, the decision to show at work after Tack slam bam, thank you ma'am. Then Rush and Tack showed on the back deck and greetings were exchanged. Rush's was a, "Hey Tyra." Tack's included his fingers sifting into the back of my hair. A gentle tug that brought my head way back to see he was bent in, and then he gave me a lip touch that was sweet and supremely annoying at the same time. The latter, because he was a jerk, he had no business kissing me, and further, because I couldn't demonstrate this or inform him of the fact with his kids in attendance. Something he very well knew. Tack went to work in my kitchen, like he cooked in my kitchen frequently, even though his motorcycle-booted feet never stepped into the damned room in his whole badass life, while the kids alternated between him in the kitchen and me on the back deck. Rush, being a gentleman, where he got this I did not know as it wasn't from his father, filled my glass twice, even once topping me up when I didn't need it. Therefore, I was essentially on glass three of white wine when Tack declared dinner was done. The kids raced into the kitchen, and I followed much more slowly. We all received piled plates and headed into the living room. Rush stretched out on the floor. Tabby collapsed in the middle of the couch. I took the end, and Tack took an armchair. And there I sat, eating Tack's fabulous. Really, they were amazing. He was a scary biker, but it couldn't be denied the man could cook. Fajitas. And watching a movie that scared the absolute crap out of me, while sipping wine and wondering how in the hell I was sitting in my very own living room with Tack and his kids eating his fajitas, sipping wine and watching a movie that scared the absolute crap out of me. I finished my fajitas, put my plate on the end table, grabbed my wine, and drained the glass, deciding that was a good excuse to escape to the kitchen. I could tell them I needed a refill, then wander to the back deck, sit there, drink wine, and plan my escape. They probably wouldn't even know I was gone, or at the very least, I could manage a head start. At this point, Tabby was on her back, knees bent, the soles of her feet in the couch, head on the armrest, eyes on the screen, so I had a direct shot in front of the couch to the kitchen. So I took my shot. "Need a refill?" I muttered, standing. "Anyone need anything?" "I'm good," Rush mumbled from the floor.
"I'm okay, tired, thanks,"
Tabby said distractedly. Excellent. They both were into the movie. A good start. I walked across the front of the couch and was passing Tack's armchair when I was stopped, and what stopped me was Tack catching my wrist in a firm grip. I looked to him to see him standing. Then I heard him announcing,
"Tyra and I are off limits for a while."
"Cool,"
Rush mumbled from the floor.
"Okay,"
Tabby said distractedly. My head jerked back to look at Tack, but his hand slid from my wrist to curl around mine. I found the wine glass not in my hand, but on the end table by Tabby's head. Then, I found myself being pulled down my hall to my bedroom. Then I found myself in my bedroom. Last, I found the door to my bedroom closed. I jerked my head back again to look at Tack, my mouth opening, my mind deciding I didn't care if his kids were just down the hall because when I finally made noise, it was going to be loud. But I found my mouth clamping shut because my body found itself in the air. Automatically, I grabbed onto Tack's shoulders, his hands at the backs of my knees, swung my legs around his hips, and then he took 3 long strides, and I was flat on my back in my bed, tack on top of me. I blinked up into his handsome, goateed face. Not this again. Tack, I started, his name vibrating because I was so freaking pissed.
Now that I'm not pissed, baby, we need to take some time to talk shit out, he said gently.
Oh no, we did not. I unwrapped my legs from his hips, shoved my feet into the bed, and bucked up at the same time I pushed against his shoulders, but Tack didn't budge. When this didn't work, I hissed, "Get off me!" He had a forearm in the bed beside me, and his other hand came up to cup my jaw, his thumb moving out to sweep my lower lip. I fought back the urge to bite him as he spoke.
Just settle, Red, and be quiet. I got something to say, and I need you to listen.
You did not have anything to say that I want to hear, I whispered irately.
You're going to hear it anyway, he replied.
I stopped pushing against his shoulders and glared at him.
Of course I am, I stated sarcastically.
You want to say something, you say it. You want to do something, you do it. And who gives a shit what I want? Is that the gist of what you were about to say? His eyes held mine.
Not exactly.
Right, well, carry on, Tack. You're going to anyway.
I see you're pissed.
Mm-hmm. I cut him off. Good call on that, handsome.
Babe, he murmured,
and I could swear his mouth was moving like he was fighting a smile. Oh my God. Do you find something funny? I snapped.
Well, yeah, he answered.
Interesting, I replied. See, I don't find anything funny.
Because this afternoon I was innocently working, and the next thing I knew, I was on my back, on my desk.
That is not cool, Tack. That scared the holy hell out of me. I ignored his face changing, his eyes changing, and what the way they changed communicated to me, and kept right on talking. And just now, I was innocently intending to walk to my kitchen and refill my wine, and I find myself flat on my back in my bed, something else that's not cool.
I needed your attention then, and I want it now, Tack returned.
Well done, handsome, you found a definite winner. You got my undivided attention then, and you have it now.
You pissed me off earlier, Red, and you've been pissing me off for a while. It wasn't a good play to take your shit out on me this afternoon.
I stared up at him a beat, then asked, I've been pissing you off for a while?
Yeah.
My head tilted on the pillow. How?
Jesus, Red, don't act stupid and don't think I am.
What? Pardon? I asked.
I don't know how it works in your world, but I'm guessing in your world you can lead a man around by his dick by acting sweet, then turning on the freeze and ignoring his ass for days. Then you think you can shovel shit at him and he'll eat it for a chance to get another taste of your sweet pussy. But baby, I'm telling you now, that's not how it works in my world.
I stuttered. Ignoring your ass?
Ignoring my ass.
I don't even know what to say. That's insane.
Red, you got my numbers in your phone, all of them. And your car has been at my garage for days, and I haven't once seen your face until I walked into our office today. I left you sweet and smiling in this goddamn bed, and I don't see you or hear your voice for 4 days. Then I walk into your office, and you give me attitude and tell me to kiss your ass because you're in a pissy mood about some shit you refuse to share? No, you gotta know, darling, that shit don't play with me.
Well, Tack, that goes both ways because you showed, and we're all about biker charm and warm looks, and then I got nothing from you for 4.5 days. Then you walk in my office and tell me to buy you a sandwich. No, you gotta know, handsome, that shit don't play with me. He steadied me a few beats. His eyes flashed, then his thumb swept my lower lip again and he murmured,
well, fuck me.
I see the lights dawning, but I don't care, I announced. Too late. I don't understand the rules to your game, but what I do understand, I don't like.
You've got to listen to me. A game is supposed to be fun, and this is no fun for me.
This isn't fun at all. When it isn't infuriating, it's frightening, and I don't like either of those. I like your kids. They're good kids. So what I'm going to say next reflects on you, not them. I want you to let your kids finish their movie, and then I'd appreciate it if you'd get yourself gone and take them with you. And by the way, I finished. I don't care if you accept my resignation or not. I won't be in tomorrow, and I'm not coming back. Now please get off me.
Listen to me, baby, he said gently.
No, I replied sharply.
Tyra, listen to me.
No. His thumb moved to press lightly against both of my lips as his head dipped down and to the side, and I felt his teeth nip my earlobe. My body stilled under his at the shocking headiness of his nip. My breast swelled, my fingers curled into his shoulders, and my belly dropped all before he growled into my ear, "Listen to me." When I made no response, his thumb slid from my lips, and his hand spanned the side of my head. He kept his mouth at my other ear, and he held me captive as he spoke.
"Shit is not good in the club. Shit is not good outside the club. Shit is not good with Naomi. I got a lot going down. It needs my attention. I need to stay sharp. I do not need to be thinking about your sweet mouth wrapped around my cock or my dick buried in your tight, wet pussy, which is all I want to think about. When I say I gotta stay sharp, baby, I mean I get dead. And when I say that, I mean the not breathing anymore variety. You don't fit into all the shit that's swirling in my life right now unless I can make you fit. That's all I got to give you, and that's all you're gonna get. And you're gonna take what I have to give, Red. You're not gonna resign. You're not gonna disappear. You're gonna be where I want you to be. You're gonna do what I want you to do, and you're gonna listen to what I have to say. And if you don't do it, I'll find a way to make you do it. That scares you. You gotta learn to get over it. And you learn not to be scared, because I'd rather cut off my own arm than ever hurt you. But you fucked up, baby. You showed me something I want, and I get what I want, and I do what I gotta do to get it. So this needs to sink in right fucking now, Tyra. You are stuck. Find some way to deal with it, and my advice would be don't fight it. You fight it, I'll take you on. That's a guarantee. You understand me?
You're scaring me right now, Tack. I admitted breathily because I was lying on my back, but everything he said made my breath ragged, and there was nothing I could do to stop it, mainly because I wasn't lying. He was scaring me right now. He lifted his head, his other hand came up so both were framing my face, and he looked into my eyes when he whispered,
"What scares you?"
What scared me? My God, he was insane. "All of it," I told him.
"Break it down," he demanded.
"Shit isn't good in the club?"
"No, shit is not good in the club."
He didn't elaborate, just confirmed, so I went on. "Outside the club?"
"Same outside the club."
Confirmation, not elaboration. And clearly I would get none of the last, so I whispered, "You could get the not-breathing variety of dead?"
"Yep."
"Oh my God," I was still whispering.
"Baby,
what's going on?"
"It's better you don't know."
I was willing to go with that. "Okay, then, can I just say that I'm not all fired up to live in your world if that's one of the problems you face?" At that, for some insane reason, Pack grinned. Then he said,
"See, I got more explaining to do."
Oh boy. Before I could stop him, not that I could stop him, he went on.
"Now, baby, you could have taken your job with Ride and kept your shit separate. You didn't. You came and partied with the club. Then you took my hand and partied with me. That means I get to claim you, and I have. There's no out once you're in, and Tyra, darling, you're in."
"That's ridiculous."
"That's the way of the world."
"No, it isn't."
"All right, babe, I'll amend that. That's the way of my world."
"Okay, Tack, but that's ridiculous." My voice was rising and I declared, "I want out."
"You don't want out."
"I do."
"You don't."
"Trust me, I do."
"No, you don't."
"I so totally do."
"You want me to prove you don't?"
"Uh-oh." "No," I answered quickly as his hands tilted my head one way, his head slanted the other, his eyes dropped to my mouth, and his face got closer.
"Too late," he muttered against my lips.
I pressed them together. He changed tactics at the last minute. His tongue slid along my lips, and my eyes drifted closed as my hands pressed against his shoulders.
"Open your mouth for me, baby,"
he whispered against my lips. I shook my head.
"I want to taste you. Open for me, darling."
He was still whispering. I shook my head again. His thumb moved across my cheek, sweeping across my lips again, his tongue following, and all that felt way, way, way too nice.
"Open for me,"
he urged gently. I shook my head again, at the same time pressing it back into the pillows. His hand left my head, and moved down my neck, my chest, as I felt his hips grind into mine. That felt way, way, way too nice, too... damn. Open, he ordered. I squeezed my eyes tight. His hand kept moving down. Open, baby. I pressed my lips tight. His fingers found the hem of my camisole, dipped under, then the warmth of his hand was moving up my skin. I squirmed under him. Open. I turned my face away from his, and his hand cupped my breast. Open, he whispered against the sensitive skin of my neck. No, I whispered to the pillow. His hand at my head moved to curve around my jaw. He pulled my face to his again just as his fingers curled into my bra and yanked the cup down, scraping the nipple, making it go hard. I sucked in breath as my body instinctively melted under his, the inside of my thighs pressing into the sides of his hips. Then his thumbs swept across my tightened nipple. My lips parted, and I gasped. There it is, he muttered. Then his lips crushed mine, and his tongue slid into my mouth. God, he tasted good. I forgot how good. So good, he tasted great. My thighs tightened against his hips. His finger met his thumb at my nipple and rolled. I felt a rush of heat between my legs. The rush was so strong, I moaned into his mouth and arched into his hand as my tongue tangled with his and my arms slid to lock around his shoulders.
Dad, Tyra! Tabby shouted. Someone's at the door!
Tack's fingers stopped rolling, his hand curled warm around my breast, and his mouth broke from mine to growl. No fucking way.
Should I answer it?
Tabby called, sounding closer.
Yeah.
My voice broke. I cleared my throat and shouted,
Yeah, honey, go ahead. I'll be right out.
Fuck, Tack clipped, and I opened my eyes to see his were drilling into mine. We're not done, he announced. I need to go see who's at my door. His fingers tensed on my breast, and he growled,
Yeah, but we're not done.
You'll
see who's at the door, then we're finishing.
I bit my lip.
With me?
He demanded to know. I stopped biting my lip to mumble, Suddenly his thumb swept my sensitized nipple, my lips parted, and my eyes drifted halfway shut.
You're with me, he murmured.
I snapped my eyes all the way open just in time to catch his grin. Then his fingers were righting my bra. His hand was out of my top. His body was off mine, and I was out of my bed and on my feet. I wobbled slightly since my knees were not ready to take on my weight, and Tack's arm went around my belly. He pulled my back to the front of his body, partly to hold me steady, and partly to march me to the door with his face in my neck, against which he ordered,
Be quick getting rid of him.
Tack! His arm around my belly gave me a squeeze, and his teeth lightly nipped the skin at my neck. My legs wobbled again.
Quick!
He commanded on a low rumble.
Okay,
I whispered. He held me close, but reached beyond me and opened my bedroom door. Chapter 9. I Can't Keep Up. I walked, connected to Tack with his arm around my middle, all the way down the hall. I was freaking out, and I didn't want to like it, but there was something about feeling his hard body and the power that naturally emanated from it surrounding me as we moved. He was not someone I felt safe with. At least this was what my mind told me. But my body felt something different. I'd rather cut off my own arm than ever hurt you. His words came to me. Words I missed when he said them, and they filled my head so full when we made it out of the hall into the living room, I had to blink my eyes to clear my mind. Then I stared at Lainey's fiancé, Elliot, standing in my living room with Rush and Tabby. The movie was on pause, and there was no Lainey in sight. Weird. Elliot never came over by himself.
You know this guy?
Tack's voice rumbled in my ear both audibly and physically.
Yeah, I replied. Hey, Elliot,
I called, smiling at him.
Hey, Tyra,
Elliot replied, his eyes, for some bizarre reason, darting back and forth repeatedly from Tack to me. Well, maybe it wasn't bizarre. Tack was a badass biker who was holding me, and Elliot knew me pretty well, so he knew I wasn't seeing a badass biker. He also probably got the lowdown from Lainey about Tack because I was pretty sure she told him everything. So he was probably surprised I was standing there in Tack's arm with two teenagers in my living room that could not be mistaken as the fruit of anyone else's loins but Tack's. Still, it was bizarre the way he was doing it because it didn't seem like surprise or shock. It seemed like fear. Elliot was not tall. He was 5'7" and Lainey was 5'9". Elliot had thinning blonde hair and a receding hairline. Lainey had thick, lustrous, long, dark hair akin to Tabby's. Elliot had a paunch and a weak chin. Lainey was slim and svelte, a human hanger, no tits or ass, amazing bone structure, beautiful green eyes, and she was pure elegance from top to toe. Lainey was a human goddess. Elliot was nowhere near a human god. But Elliot was brilliant. A genius, and not one of those socially awkward or arrogant geniuses. He was easy to talk to, he was funny, he was sweet, he was thoughtful, he was generous, and he was kind. He never missed Lainey's birthday, and always bought her the perfect present. Not always something expensive, but always something she wanted, or something meaningful. Ditto with anniversaries. She said he made her laugh. She said he listened when she had a bad day. She said he held her when they slept. And she said she knew beyond any doubt she was the most important thing in the world to him. So Goddess Lainey saw beyond Elliot's looks, and he became the most important thing in the world to her. They were a love match. Surprising to some, I was sure, but real. And because he made my best friend happy, I adored him. "What's up?" I asked, moving forward only to be tugged back, again bizarrely, into Tack's body. This was bizarre, not because he was holding me, which I was getting. He intended to do whenever the hell he felt like it. No, it was bizarre how he was doing it. In the hall, his natural badassness made me feel casually safe. Right now, his tight hold and the feel of his hard body, statue still and weirdly alert at my back, made me feel he was intentionally keeping me safe. What on earth?
I was wondering, Elliot started.
Is Lainey here? I asked because I didn't want Lainey there. I was a little panicked that she'd come storming in at any moment, see Tack, see his kids, see the evidence of fajitas in the movie and lose her mind. Lainey might be pure elegance from top to toe, but that didn't mean she couldn't be pure drama. And when Lainey let it rip, watch out.
No, Elliot replied. His eyes went over my shoulder and up, and he asked, Can I, Kane, Mr. Allen, can I talk to you?
I stared at Elliot, wondering what he was on about and who he was talking to. Elliot's eyes flitted to me, then back to Tack, when he finished,
Alone.
That was when my body went statue still. It stayed statue still for approximately a nanosecond before I heard Tack say to Elliot,
Don't move.
Then he turned me around, let me go, grabbed my hand, and I found myself tugged down the hall. Then I found myself in my room, and the door was again closed. I tipped my head back to stare up at Tack.
How do you know that guy?
He asked. He's my best friend's fiancé, I answered. Tack looked down to the floor and muttered,
Fuck!
Okay, now he was scaring me again, but for a different reason.
What?
I whispered. His head came up and his eyes caught mine.
I'm going to take him out to the back deck. When I do that, I need you to promise me you'll stay in the living room with my kids, and you won't listen. Can you promise me that, Tyra?
Oh my God, what was going on? Why? I breathed.
Promise me.
I leaned in and put a hand to his chest. Why? I repeated. His hand curled around the back of my neck, and his face dipped close.
I'll explain why later if you promise me now, baby, he said gently.
I stared into his eyes as fear filled my heart. Then, for some crazy reason, I nodded.
Words, baby, give me the words, he demanded.
I promise, I whispered. His head tilted back. His mouth touched mine. He let my neck go and grabbed my hand again. 2 seconds later, we were in the living room.
Back deck,
Tack growled. Then he prowled to the kitchen and disappeared. Elliot following him, and the whole time he did, he avoided my eyes. I heard the door slam, and my body jumped when I did.
"You okay, Tyra?"
Rush asked quietly. My eyes slid to him, and it was then I realized I was trembling.
"Yeah, honey, I'm fine,"
I lied and threw him a fake smile. "That movie just freaked me out a bit, and your dad was, helping me out with that." I kept lying.
"Yeah, bet he was,"
Tabby said on a giggle, then collapsed in a full-body plop on my couch. But Rush didn't move. He studied me, like his father had a tendency to do, and I guessed he didn't buy the fake smile or the lies. I didn't have time to consider the fact that Rush was 17, nearly 18, and astute. Something bad was happening, and I only had time to consider that. So I curled into the armchair Tack had vacated, and after a moment's hesitation and further study of me, Rush stretched out on the floor again and started the movie. We watched perhaps 5 minutes of it before we heard the back door open. I jumped out of the chair and Rush paused the movie like he'd been listening for the door, too. I was on my feet and Rush was at my side by the time Elliot and Tack re-entered the room. Elliot came straight to me and grabbed my upper arms. I felt Rush close to my side, but all I could see was Elliot's pale, plainly freaked way the hell out face and panicked eyes.
"Don't tell Lainey," he begged on a whisper.
"Get your hands off her,"
I heard Tack growl and felt Rush get closer and Tack closing in, but I only had eyes for Elliot.
"Don't tell her what?"
I whispered.
"Don't tell her," he pleaded.
"Ben, what did I say?"
Tack bit out, and Elliot's head jerked to the side and up.
"She can't tell her,"
he told Tack, and his fingers tensed, digging into my arms so much they caused pain.
"She'll do what she's gotta do. Now, I'm not gonna say it again. Take your fucking hands off or I'll make you do it,"
Tack warned. Elliot paled further, released me, and took a quick step away. His eyes found mine, and I saw his were wet.
"I had to,"
he whispered. Both his hands went to his hair, and he repeated,
"I had to."
Then he ran, actually ran too, and out the front door. When it slammed behind him, I jolted out of my freeze and ran after him, calling, "Elliot!"
"Movie on. You and your sister staying here. Get me Rush,"
Tack ordered in a low, serious voice. I was interrupted in throwing open the door when he caught my hand, and I found myself dragged yet again to my bedroom. I didn't fight it, and the minute the door closed behind Tack, I got in close. So close, my breasts brushed his chest, and both my hands went to his tee at his abs and curled in. I tipped my head back and whispered,
"What's going on?"
I was freaked out and near tears. I felt a chill on my skin, and my stomach hurt. Tack's hands came up, palms to my jaw. Fingers curled around my ears and neck.
"Tell me what you know about him,"
he demanded quietly. He's a computer programmer. He's a nice guy. He's really smart. He's getting married to my best friend in the whole world. Their wedding date is just over 6 weeks away. I shook my head in short shakes, not breaking eye contact. "I don't know. I like him. He loves her, and I like him." Tack's hands left my face, and one went to his back pocket. He pulled out his phone, hit a few buttons, and put it to his ear. "Tack," I started, but stopped when one of his hands came to my jaw again, but his thumb rested on my lips.
"Dog,"
he said into his phone.
"Elliot Belova just left Tyra's house. Pick him up. I want him at the compound in an hour. I'll meet you there."
I felt my eyes get wide as Tack shoved his phone into his back pocket. Then my fingers curled deeper into his shirt, and I pushed closer. His thumb slid from my lips to my cheek, and I whispered,
"Please, talk to me."
"Your friend just offered me $500,000 to whack the big man in the Russian mob."
I blinked and swayed at the same time, and Tack's arms went around me fast and tight. Then I breathed,
"What?"
"I think you heard me, baby," he said softly.
"Whack?"
I whispered.
"Murder, kill, assassinate,"
Tack explained. "I know what it means," I shook my head.
Do you do that?"
I asked. His arms tightened briefly before he said low,
"Fuck no."
except 5 minutes ago when I was moved to consider it, when that fuckwad stood on your back deck and offered me 500 large to end another guy. But it wasn't the guy he wanted me to end I was considering ending. Then why? What? Why?
Tak's face got close and his arms got tighter.
This guy, Red, this guy is not a good guy.
But he's Elliot, I said stupidly.
He is not a good guy.
Why do you say that?
I say it because he offered me 500K to kill someone. I say that because I know he's not as smart as you think, because he's dumb enough to get involved with some serious fucked up shit. And I say that because I just found out he's got the love of a woman who's probably a good woman, and she's gonna end up brokenhearted, hurt, or worse.
I felt my breathing escalate.
Why do you say that?
This shit, the kind of shit he's in, leaks and no one's safe.
I gave him my full weight as I heard my breath hitch and felt tears fill my eyes.
Tak, I whispered. She's gotta cut him loose.
Tak.
Yesterday, Red.
Oh my God.
You get me?
My God.
His hand came back to my jaw, the pads of his fingers digging into my neck.
Baby, do you get me?
I pulled myself together and nodded.
You go to her, he ordered.
Okay, I whispered.
But you wait. I want you on the back of one of my boys' bikes when you do.
I nodded.
I'm bringing him in and he and I are going to have a chat.
I nodded again.
She needs to be here. She's on the back of one of my boys' bikes. I'm done with him. I'm coming here. If she needs you, you bring her here. You do not stay there. I'm putting your house on radar. You're in this bed tonight when I get to you, yeah?
I nodded again.
Give me the words, Tyra.
If she needs me, I bring her here, only on the back of one of your boys' bikes, and I'm in bed when you come to me.
That's it, baby.
I swallowed and felt a tear slide partway down my cheek, but it didn't get very far before Tak swept it away.
That's the only tear he gets, darling. This is not a guy you cry over.
I'm crying for Lainey,
I told him as another tear spilled out of my other eye. That one didn't get very far either, because Tak's head dipped in, and his lips kissed it away. That felt unbelievably sweet, but my heart hurt so much when he did that, I closed my eyes and tears spilled down each side. I felt his forehead against mine, another swipe of his thumb to wipe the wetness away, and I heard him whisper,
Baby, I can't keep up.
She's my best friend, I whispered back.
She's in good hands, he said.
That made me open my eyes and look into his brilliant blue ones. I did not know this man. He freaked me out. He scared me. He infuriated me. And he excited me. I fell in love with him once and started to do it again. All of this in less than 2 weeks. And I had absolutely no idea if I could trust him.
Promise?
I whispered. And he nodded.
Give me the words, Tak.
To that he grinned. His mouth moved to mine, and he murmured,
I promise, Red.
Then he pressed his lips lightly to mine, touched his tongue even lighter to my lips, and then his face moved an inch away. Then he said,
Need a set of keys, darling.
I nodded, and it was me who took his hand, before I led him to my kitchen, where there was a Cocopelli key holder on the wall by the back door. I grabbed a spare set and gave Tak the keys to my house. Chapter 10, Metal Detector.
You okay?
I asked Lainey, who was tucked into the double bed in my guest bedroom, her eyes red and puffy, her nose red and swollen, and about 1,000 used Kleenexes littering the nightstand and floor by the bed.
No,
she snuffled, reached out to the Kleenex box, snatched another one out, shoved her face into it, and burst into loud tears.
Honey, I whispered, stroking her hair back.
I was sitting on the bed beside her, although for the last hour I'd been lying in it with her. She was inconsolable until about 2 minutes ago when she'd pulled it together, and I thought it was safe to leave her. Apparently it wasn't. Earlier, Tak had taken off after having a quiet word with Rush in the kitchen, giving his daughter a kiss on the cheek and one on the lips for me. Rush and Tabby had hung around until Brick roared up on his bike. Rush walked me out to Brick's bike and promised to lock up behind him and Tabby. I'd gone to Lainey, explained what had happened with Elliot, and what Tack told me about him, not including the fact he was picking Elliot up to have a chat. I didn't think Tack's chats were like any kinds of chats Lainey and I could comprehend, and I figured Lainey would know that. Not surprisingly, Lainey had not believed this at first. There was a drama where she accused me of being insane and blinded by hormones when it came to Tack. Brick, who had been quietly standing inside the front door of the house, came in and confirmed my words by saying,
"Babe, what Cherry here says is true. Everyone on the grid knows Elliot Belova is a serious bad dude. I got no reason to shit you. This guy is whacked."
Lainey had stared up at big, bearded, man-bun-haired Brick. Then she burst into tears. I wrapped my arms around Lainey, but looked up at Brick and mouthed, "Cherry?" To which Brick grinned and muttered,
"Creative."
I rolled my eyes. Brick yanked out his phone and called some guy named Hopper. Then I helped Lainey pack a bag. Then I climbed on the back of Brick's bike. Lainey climbed on the back of Hopper's bike, and we roared back to my house. They made sure we were in safe. Brick told me to lock up after them. Then the boys rolled off. Commence wild-ass crying, Jag. Not a small amount of ranting, a couple of tantrums, one that included Lainey throwing her 2.5-carat diamond engagement ring into my backyard, and I made a note to self to rent a metal detector prior to mowing my lawn the next time. Lainey texting Elliot about 700 times, calling him every name she could think of, and I finally got her to bed with a box of Kleenex, which brought me to now.
"You think you know someone?"
she sobbed into her tissue. "Oh, Lainey," I whispered, still stroking her hair.
"I had to learn from a biker that my fiancé is whacked,"
she wailed. I bit my lip.
"I mean,"
she pulled the tissue away, started to look up at me. Her eyes caught on something across the room. They grew huge. She bolted upright in bed and screamed bloody murder. I leaped from the bed and turned to the door where her eyes were glued and saw Tack leaning against the jam.
"Hey, babe."
Tack greeted me casually over Lainey's screaming, which fortunately made Lainey stop screaming.
"Tack," I said softly.
"You? You're Tack?"
Lainey whispered, and I looked down at her to see she was staring at Tack.
"That's me,"
Tack said.
"Holy shit, Ty-Ty, you are not wrong. He is hot."
I closed my eyes and dropped my head, but closing my eyes didn't mean my ears closed, and therefore I heard Tack's very deeply amused chuckle. "Fabulous." Apparently heartbreak in finding out your fiancé was a bad dude didn't interfere with appreciating a fine male specimen. Good to know. Before I recovered from my latest mortification that involved Tack, I felt his arm slide around my shoulders. My head came up when he curled me into his side, and I saw that he was looking down at Lainey.
"How you doing?"
he asked gently.
"Ugh,"
Lainey answered, her eyes zipping back and forth between Tack and me.
"You need anything?"
Tack asked.
"Ugh,"
Lainey answered, still doing the zipping thing.
"Ice cream?"
Tack went on.
"Whiskey?"
he continued when Lainey shook her head.
"Weed?"
Luckily, he stopped there.
"Ugh,"
Lainey repeated, her eyes settling on Tack. "I think she's good," I finally answered for her.
"Yeah, I think I'm good,"
Lainey confirmed. Tack pulled me closer, asking,
"You done with Tyra for tonight?"
Sure,
Lainey said.
"Is that a sure-sure, or is that a not-so-sure-sure?"
Tack asked. I looked up at him, thinking he was being both very cool and very sweet. I didn't know what to make of this coming from him.
"I think I'm cried out for now,"
Lainey told Tack.
"Right," he said quietly. "Then I'm gonna steal her."
"Okay,"
Lainey agreed.
"You rest good," Tack told her.
Okay,
Lainey said. Tack didn't speak for a beat. Then he said softly,
"You'll be all right."
She blinked up at him. I did too. Then he turned us to the door.
Night,
she called to our backs. I looked over my shoulder at her and replied, "Night, honey. I'm right next door if you need me."
"Night,"
Tack said, not looking back. He guided me out of the room, closed the door, then he guided me to my room, closed that door, and curled me to him full frontal. I looked up at him and he asked,
"How'd that go?"
"On the drama breakup with your fiancé 6 weeks before the wedding because you just found out he's a bad dude scale of 1 to 10, that was a 27. Tack's lips twitched. I went on, "There's a $14,000 diamond engagement ring somewhere in my backyard." Tack's lips stopped twitching because they curved upward. "Do you know where I can rent a metal detector?" I queried. The curve turned into his sexy grin before he stated, "I'll get one of my boys to find it." That would be good considering she can hawk that ring and add a room onto her house, make it a shrine to all the reasons she hates Elliot Belova. The sexy grin turned into a bigger, sexier smile that included the lines radiating from his eyes deepening and his face looking like he was fighting laughter. It was a seriously good look, and I got so lost in it I didn't notice it start to fade until his gentle voice came at me.
"You seem better."
I pulled in breath through my nose, then I told him, "I'm better because she's going to survive and my hard part is done. Now I just have to offer support and that's easy." He studied me again, his eyes moving over my face before they caught mine.
"You need sleep or you want to know about this guy?"
he asked. I needed sleep. It had to be well beyond midnight, and although my boss probably would understand if I called off and hung with my best friend the next day, seeing as he was intimately involved in this drama, now that I was getting the hang of it, my job was pretty busy. Not to mention, the mechanics and body shop guys would not be good on their own. They needed direction. They also needed a listening ear. They further needed coffee and donuts. I missed donuts one day, and I thought there was going to be a revolt. I had to get into ride. But I still wanted to know about Elliot. "I want to know about Elliot," I told him. He nodded and gave me a squeeze.
"Get ready for bed, baby. I gotta make a call. I'll meet you there and we'll talk before we sleep."
I blinked at him as he let me go, turned, and walked out the door, closing it behind him. What did he mean? Get ready for bed and I'll meet you there and we'll talk before we sleep? The getting ready for bed part I could do. My getting ready for bed left me in nearly the same outfit I was in when Tack left the room, except it was drawstring pajama shorts rather than jean shorts, and there was no bra under my camisole. Therefore, I did that part. I was sitting cross-legged on my covers, rubbing hand cream in my hands, when Tack returned, again closing the door behind him. "Tack, maybe we should..." I stopped speaking when his hands immediately went to the hem of his tee. Then it was up and gone, and I had a full-on view of his wide chest, tight abs, and array of tattoos. Holy heck, I forgot what a great chest he had, how broad his shoulders were, how much I really liked the definition of his collarbone, how much more I liked the ridges of his six-pack, and how stupefyingly fascinating his tats were. He'd undone his belt and two buttons of his jeans by the time I pulled it together, but I lost it again when he turned and sat on the bed to pull off his boots, and I caught sight of his back. Tack's back was tattooed, too, from shoulder blade to shoulder blade, spanning his ribs and down his spine. It was an insignia I saw a lot around Ride, and included wings, flames, the profile of an eagle, and the American flag, with a waving banner that spanned his waist in which, in old style, Old West writing, it said simply, "Chaos." It was an unbelievably cool tattoo. I hadn't recovered from it by the time he had his boots off and stood. It was then I snapped to, opened my mouth to suggest we talk in the living room prior to his leaving for the night, and then his jeans were gone. My breath caught and my eyes glazed over, and before I knew it, Tack swept the covers down, climbed into bed, grabbed my hand, pulled me forward, so I went up on my knees, then toppled down on him. Finally, he swept the covers over us both. I lifted my head and chest and stared down at him. I mumbled.
"Elliot Belova is in some serious bad shit, and I say that knowing he was in serious bad shit before. The shit he's actually in is serious."
Tex started the conversation, and I snapped my mouth shut. Then I opened it to ask, "So he chatted?"
"Man wouldn't shut up," Tack answered.
Suddenly all ears, I dropped my chest to his to get closer and whispered, "Tell me." To that, for some reason, he asked,
"Your girl in there, this wedding, it big?"
Yeah, she's spending $10,000 on flowers alone.
"Jesus," Tack muttered.
"Her dress costs more than my car," I informed him.
"Fucking hell,"
Tack was still muttering. "And you already know about the $14,000 engagement ring. I won't get into the catering," I finished.
"Christ, that explains that," Tack said.
"What?" I asked.
"Babe, her man loves her. Blinded by that shit. Wants to hand her the world."
"And?" I prompted when he didn't go on.
"And Red, he can't afford $14,000 engagement rings and $10,000 on flowers, whatever the fuck on catering. That guy isn't so deep he drowned about 6 months ago. He's dead man walking."
I felt my eyes get wide.
"Really?" "Really," Tack affirmed.
"I thought he made good money. She made good money, I thought."
"They might make good money, darling, but I'm guessing the way they live added to that fucking wedding."
He shook his head.
"He couldn't swing it. He also couldn't say no. He had some money, made what he called a bad investment. But what he means is, he got ripped off. Promised 200% return in 2 months turned into a loss of 150K in the blink of an eye. The guy he gave the money to disappeared. Belova scrambled. Tried to find a way out using family ties, but found himself hooked to some serious men who wanted to use his super brain to do some super serious illegal shit. They paid him, and these guys pay you. They own you. Now they own him. He can't get out from under it. I just called a cop I know, and it's worse. He's not only on the grid, he's on radar. These men won't cut him loose. And Lawson at DPD didn't say it flat out, but I get the sense the cops know what he's doing. Belova's done. He wants out, and he wants out bad.
Your friend talked to him about me. This guy's got an idea about bikers. He came over here to talk to you to get to me, but he got me. He made another stupid play thinking I do that shit. Now he's owned by the Russian mob. He's on cop radar, and he's not my favorite person, making assumptions like that about me. One way or the other, this guy is fucked. Far as I can see, he's got two options, jail or dead. But even if the cops get to him before the mob, he goes inside, he's dead. He even thinks of talking to the cops, he's dead. So my guess is, he's dead.
I stared down at him and felt my nose start to sting as I thought of sweet, generous, totally in love with my best friend, Elliot. Then I whispered, "Damn, I don't think I'm better anymore." Then I dropped my head and did a face plant in Tack's chest. I felt his hand glide into my hair and cup the back of my head as I heard and felt him mutter,
"Baby."
I turned my head, pressed my cheek to his chest, and Tack's hand slid to under my ear, but his thumb moved to stroke my cheek as I deep-breathed to fight back my tears. Then I said softly, "Don't be mad at him, Tack. It wasn't cool, him asking you to do that. It was messed up, but it sounds like he's desperate. And I always knew he'd do anything for Lainey. He's got enough to worry about. He doesn't need to worry about pissing off a scary biker dude.
Babe, he's still at the compound, which right now is maybe the safest place in Denver he could be."
I lifted my head and slid my hand up his chest to rest my chin on it as my eyes went to his. "You're protecting him?"
"For now, until I decide what to do with him. But Red, that don't mean I'm not still pissed at him. Coming to your house, talking to me on your deck, with you and my kids in the house and asking me something that fucked up?"
He shook his head.
"No."
I nodded because he was right. What Elliot did was a big no.
Therefore, to change the subject, I asked, "What did he do for the mob?"
"Better question, what didn't he do? Hacks, creative accounting, creative banking, wiretaps, camera feeds, drops, pickups, messenger. It's lucky this guy works from home, and I'll lay cake down on the fact he got zero real work done in the last 6 months. He's been so visible doing shit for Lescheva."
Leschyeva?
Grigory Leschyeva, top guy in the Russian mob and distant relative of your boy, Elliot.
Oh, I whispered. My eyes slid to the side, and I murmured, also Lainey could have peonies in August.
Tack's fingers still in my hair tensed against my scalp, and my eyes slid back to him.
No, that woman in there with her mountain of Kleenex would be happy without peonies in August, Red. This is about him growing a pair, manning up and telling her he can't handle the world. She didn't want the world, she wanted him. He didn't have enough confidence in himself to believe that a woman like her would want a man like him. And in the end, he took away the only thing she really ever wanted.
Wow. I liked that Tack knew that, and I also liked how he said it. I didn't tell him that. Instead, I whispered, this is true.
I know it's true, he whispered back.
If he's broke, how is he going to pay you $500,000 to whack this Leschyeva guy? I asked.
Proven irrefutably he's a moron. He was going to use his skills to steal it from the mob.
Yes, that proved irrefutably that Elliot was a moron, big time.
I turned my head, pressed my cheek against my hand on his chest, and sighed.
Tack's fingers tensed against my scalp again, and he ordered,
come here, baby, I want a kiss. Then I gotta get some shut-eye. I'm fucking wiped.
I blinked at my room. Now was the time to tell him he wasn't sleeping in my bed, and he needed to go to another one. The problem was, he was naked in my bed, and I was resting on his chest.
Oh boy, how did I let that happen?
I decided to blame Elliot and Tack's tats. Then I pulled in breath, lifted my head, and looked at Tack.
Maybe you should sleep elsewhere tonight? I suggested, what I hoped sounded more like a requirement.
He grinned, his fingers slid to the back of my head, and he started pulling me to him, saying,
quit fucking around, Red, I'm tired.
I wasn't, fucking around.
His hand stopped putting pressure on my head and his brows knit.
Say again?
I think you should,
damn!
With Lainey here, you know, you should...
His hand left my hair, both hands went under my armpits, and he hauled me up his chest, then rolled into me so he was on top. Then he gave me the goodnight kiss to beat all goodnight kisses. It was long, hard, deep, wet, and utterly delicious. When he was done, I was breathing heavily. My lips were tingling, my nipples were tingling, and there were other places that had started to tingle, but he'd stopped. Then he rolled to his back, reached an arm out to turn off the light on my nightstand. The room was plunged into darkness, and he tucked me into his side.
My cheek was to his shoulder, my hand on his abs, and I was trying to control my breath. Once I got my breath under control, I said quietly into the darkness, I guess this means you aren't going to go home. His arm around my waist got tight before it relaxed and he replied with humor in his tone.
Yeah, Red, that's what it means.
I wondered what he would have done if I hadn't slithered out of his room when he'd kicked me out of his bed and instead just stayed. It was on the tip of my tongue to ask him, but I couldn't call up the courage. Then I realized I had no choice but to sleep with a naked Tack in my bed. And even though he'd been very cool about Elliot, with Lainey and even with me, this annoyed me to an extreme. He'd said, you don't fit into all the shit that's swirling in my life right now unless I can make you fit. That's all I got to give you, and that's all you're gonna get. And you're gonna take what I have to give, Red. You're not gonna resign. You're not gonna disappear. You're gonna be where I want you to be. You're gonna do what I want you to do, and you're gonna listen to what I have to say. And if you don't do it, I'll find a way to make you do it.
And when he'd said that, clearly he wasn't lying. I decided we needed to have a conversation. And when we had our next one, we needed to have it when I wasn't flat on my back, with Tack on top of me. I rolled away from him to my other side, tucking my hands under my cheek and staring into the darkness. He rolled with me, his arm curving tight around my ribs and pulling me deep into his body as his knee came up, taking mine with it, and he leaned in, partially pinning me to the bed.
I'd rather cut off my own arm than ever hurt you. He'd said that, too. Mixed messages and multiple personalities. I closed my eyes tight, pulled in a deep breath, and then let it go. When I did, Tak's arm moved out and up. His hand found my wrist, pulled it down, and his fingers laced in mine before he tucked both our hands tight to my chest. Then he whispered in my ear, "Sleep, baby. It's all gonna be all right." He thought I was worried about Elliot and Lainey, and he was being sweet about it. I closed my eyes tighter, took another deep breath, and let it go. Then I whispered back, "Okay, Tak.
Night, Red."
"Night." I felt his lips touch the back of my neck. Then I felt his weight settle into me again. And a little while later, I heard his steady breathing. A little while after that, mine joined his. Chapter 11. You Forget Something? I woke and felt the morning, bright Colorado sunshine on my eyelids. I rolled to my back and opened my eyes. Then I rolled to my other side and smelled musk and man. Tak. I breathed deep. Nice. I blinked and saw my alarm clock said it was 10 to 9, and I stared. 10 to 9? Damn, I was supposed to be at work an hour ago. I threw the covers back and scrambled out of bed. My feet hit the ground running, but I tripped and went flying, righting myself just before I took a header. I looked back to see what I tripped on, and it was Tak's boots. Then I stared at Tak's boots beside my bed, liking the sight of them lying there, just like I liked the smell of him on my sheets. Holy hell. I scurried to the door, threw it open, and was going to head to the bathroom, but I heard the murmur of voices coming from the kitchen and stopped. I looked to Lainey's door and saw it was open. Something weird seeped into me. I stopped rushing and walked slowly toward the living room, rounded the wall, and moved just into the kitchen. My kitchen was long and narrow, running the length of the house. At the front of it was the dining area. The bulk of the kitchen was beyond a short bar with two bar stools in front of it. One of those bar stools held Lainey's firm, slim ass, her body encased in a shimmery short silk kimono-style robe, complete with beautiful embroidery on the back, most of which you couldn't see because her gleaming thick dark hair was flowing down her back. Across the bar from her was Tak, wearing his gray tee from the day before and his jeans. They both held coffee mugs. Lainey was in profile, and she'd not 24 hours ago found out her beloved fiancé was the kind of guy who would track down a biker in a failed attempt to have someone whacked. Not to mention she hated Tak and wanted me to quit my job, so I'd never see him again. But I still saw they both were smiling so big it looked like they just stopped laughing. Something in my heart spasmed at this sight. Lainey was my friend, and she had been for 15 years. I knew she was beautiful. I'd been walking at her side or sitting on a bar stool next to her or at a table with her enough times to notice the appreciating glances, see the drink sent her way, watch the men slide in beside her. But that was the way of the world. Beautiful women got attention, and she was my Lainey. I was happy for her that she did. But 2 weeks ago, I watched Tak making out with a gorgeous, slim brunette, and now he was laughing in my kitchen with one. And even though she was my friend who I knew wouldn't go there, whether or not Elliot was in or just dumped on his ass out of the picture, I didn't like it. And I didn't like that I didn't like it. Holy hell, now I was getting multiple personalities. Tak's eyes went from Lainey to me. His smile stayed in place, and his chin tipped up.
"Morning, babe."
Lainey spun on a bar stool toward me.
"Hey, Ty-Ty!"
"Hey," I muttered, walking in directly to Lainey. I got close and slid her hair off her shoulder. "You okay this morning?"
"No,"
she answered. Her eyes slid to Tak. She smiled beautifully at him, her innate elegance radiating from every pore, even makeup-less, in a kimono, and with slightly puffy eyes from the crying jag yesterday. Then she looked back to me and stated,
"But Tak's pancakes go a long way to soothe the ravaged soul of a woman who's just found out her fiancé is whacked."
Tak chuckled. I looked down at my bar to see a plate that once held something covered with maple syrup. Tack had made Lainey pancakes. I didn't like that either.
You want pancakes, Red?
Tack asked, and I looked up at him thinking he looked good in my kitchen. Really good. And also thinking he looked like he belonged in it with Lainey.
Damn.
Nope, I murmured, giving Lainey a bump with my body and heading around the bar to the coffee pot. I need coffee and to jump in the shower. I'm late for work. I stopped in front of the coffee maker, grabbed a mug, and was in the process of dropping my arm when I suddenly found myself pressed to the counter, and what was pressing me was Tack's long, hard body. His arms curved around my ribs, then I felt his goatee rough against my neck as his chin shifted my hair aside, then his face was in my neck.
You forget something?
His gravelly voice rumbled in a murmur against my skin.
Yeah, to turn on my alarm, I answered, my body still as a statue, but every inch of my skin was tingling.
No, you didn't. I turned it off.
You did?
I asked the cupboard.
You're off today. See into your friend. Boss's orders.
Tack!
His arms gave me a squeeze, and his goatee tickled my ear when his lips lifted there.
You forgot something, he whispered.
I turned my head and his came up as I did. When I caught his eyes, I asked,
I did?
Yeah.
I was confused, freaked out about my weird response to Tack and Lainey laughing, and maybe still a little asleep, so my brows drew together.
What'd I forget?
One of his arms left my middle and cupped the side of my head.
This,
he muttered, then his mouth was on mine. It wasn't a morning mouth touch. It was a kiss, a serious kiss. So serious his body moved back, turned mine to face him, then it moved in again, pressing me into the counter, his hand cupping the side of my head, slid into my hair to cup the back and hold me to him as his other arm locked tight around my waist, plastering me to his body. It was such a serious kiss and such a great kiss. I totally forgot Lainey was there. My confusion, my weird response to Tack spending time with Lainey, and the sleep that lingered and my arms moved to wrap around his shoulders. I went up on my toes and I went at it right along with Tack, maybe more. I was off guard, plus I loved how he tasted, and I was hungry for it. So without the barest thought about anything but Tack, his tongue and his mouth, I drank deep. Tack broke the kiss, but he didn't take his mouth away when he whispered against my lips.
Jesus fuck. Red, you can use that sweet mouth.
And his arm around me squeezed tight on the word fuck. I gazed up at him in a haze, thinking he could use his mouth too. Thinking a lot more than my skin was tingling, and also thinking I wasn't quite done with his mouth when I heard Lainey clear her throat. I blinked and the haze cleared.
Oh my God, I whispered against Tack's mouth and watched up close as the lines beside his eyes deepened in a smile.
This would have been fascinating, but I was belatedly mortified, and therefore I pulled quickly out of Tack's arms and stepped to the side, my gaze finding my best friend.
God, Lainey, sorry, I...
Don't mind me, she said, her mouth smiling, but there was pain in her eyes. I remember what it was like in the first throes of meeting someone. I remember it because it was a lot like what I still had with Elliot just the night before last.
She stopped talking. The smile faltered, and her eyes got bright. Oh no, I'd seen that look a lot last night. She was going to blow.
Damn,
I muttered. And Tack's arm circled my chest from behind, pulling me to him, which was the wrong thing to do, because Lainey's eyes dropped to his arm. Her lips quivered, and then she burst out sobbing, twisting a bit so she wouldn't faceplant in her maple syrup plate. She faceplanted in her arm on the counter, but her hair went into her maple syrup plate.
I think the pancakes were off,
Tack muttered in my ear. I yanked free of Tack's arms, whirled and glared at him. His eyes caught mine, but my eyes caught his mouth twitch before he asked,
What?
I slapped his arm, lifted up on my toes to get in his face and hissed,
You don't make out like that in front of newly broken up people. In fact, you don't make out like that in front of anyone.
His face moved too within an inch of mine, and he whispered,
Wrong, baby. I do. I make out wherever the fuck I want, which means you do too.
I squinted my eyes at him, whirled back around, and ran to Lainey. I put my hand on her back and carefully extricated her hair from the maple syrup.
Honey, I whispered, you got your hair in the syrup.
She sat back abruptly and looked to the ceiling, crying out,
I don't care! Who cares? I can shampoo with maple syrup. There's no one to care.
Then she flopped back down on the counter, and I had just enough time to grab the plate and get it out of range. I lifted my eyes to Tack and skewered him with a look at the same time I held the plate up and jerked it at him. He sauntered to me and took the plate while I pulled Lainey off her chair.
Let's get you into the shower, I murmured to her.
No shower, no work, no nothing. I'm going to eat Tex pancakes until I weigh 900 pounds and die, and they'll have to cut around your door to get my carcass out of your house.
I so totally told you that when Lainey let a drama rip. Watch out.
You'll feel better after a shower, I told her, guiding her out of the kitchen.
I'll never feel better, Ty-Ty,
she told me, and I sighed. Then I guided her to her bedroom. I dashed to the bathroom and did my business quickly. After I was done, I went back to her bedroom and guided her with her toiletries and clothes stuffed in her arms into the bathroom. As I was doing this last, I heard the knock on my front door. I focused on Lainey and got her situated, and as I was exiting the bathroom to see who on earth was at the door, I saw Tack was there before me.
Hey, Tyra!
Tabby called chirpily.
Yo, Tyra!
Rush called after her. I stood in the hall outside my bathroom in my drawstring pajama shorts and camisole, with my wild bed hair staring at Tack and his kids in my living room, and heard the bathroom door click behind me.
Hey!
I called, stunned.
Dad texted, said it was an impromptu Alan pancake morning, so we came right over,
Tabby stated.
Nothing better, not even his fajitas,
Rush put in.
Babe, get your ass in the kitchen so I can feed you and my kids and get on the road,
Tack ordered while sauntering toward my kitchen. His kids followed. I stood in the hall and stared, then I blinked, then I stared some more, then my body came unstuck, and I motored into the kitchen to find Tack at the stove, Rush on Lainey's bar stool, and Tabby's head in the fridge. I went direct to Tack and got close to his side, seeing he was pouring perfect silver dollar pancakes on my griddle.
Can I talk to you? I asked quietly.
His head turned and he looked down at me.
Yeah,
he answered, but otherwise didn't move.
Elsewhere? I defined my request.
Then no, he said through a grin.
I opened my mouth to make my request sound more like a demand when a loud banging came at my door. It was so loud, my body jerked in surprise, and Tack's head whipped around.
What the fuck?
He started to mutter when we heard,
Open this motherfucking door!
Oh my God, it was Naomi. More loud banging, so loud and violent I was uncertain my door could withstand it, and I wondered if some of it was kicking. Then,
I know you're all in there! I saw you go in there! Open this goddamn motherfucking door!
Through this, Tack crashed down my fabulous pink Williams-Sonoma mixing bowl, with the little pouring thingamajig in the lip, shoved the griddle off the burner, turned and stalked out of my kitchen.
Oh boy.
I hurried after him and felt Rush and Tabby at my heels, but we weren't fast enough. Tack had the door open and he was standing in it. My body stuttered to a stunned halt when I saw Tack's torso rock back because Naomi shoved a hand violently in his shoulder to push in. She slammed the door behind her, took three steps in, turned to me, Rush and Tabby, and I fancied I saw her head split right down the middle and fire pour out. Such was her fury.
You stupid skank whore,
she shrieked, then came right at me. I braced, and she made an oof noise and bent double at the middle when Tack caught her at the waist and pulled her back at the same time Rush's arm went around my waist, a fair bit more gently, I might add, and he pulled me behind him. Tack positioned himself between Naomi and me and planted a hand in her chest.
Have you lost your fucking mind?
He growled.
Get out to your car,
she screeched at Tabby. Tack was shoving her toward the door, and she was fighting it, but losing.
Get the fuck out of here,
he was still growling. His voice low, deep. The gravel had turned to ice shards, and it wasn't directed at me, but I still felt my skin rise in goosebumps.
You did not spend time in that fucking bitch's home!
Naomi screamed again, for some reason, at Tabby.
Oh, God!
Tabby whispered, and her words were not filled with ice. They were filled with embarrassment. Naomi landed against the door, Tack's hands still pressed into her chest, and his face got into hers.
You follow them here?
He asked, his voice still scary.
Fuck you!
She shouted in his face.
You follow the kids here?
Tack barked in hers.
They are not spending time with your latest piece of tail,
she yelled.
You're telling me you slunk out to your fucking car and followed your kids to my woman's house?
Tack stated. His woman? When did I become Tack's woman?
Tabby's already part slut spending time around you and all your bitches. She don't need to learn the high-class, fancy-ass way to spread her legs.
Naomi fired back. I gasped. Rush made a noise like a growl, and Tabby whimpered. Automatically, my arm stretched back, searching blindly until I found it. And then I wrapped my hand around Tabby's, held it tight, and moved back until the back of my side touched the front of hers. The minute it did, Tabby's hand closed around mine like a vice.
Did I just hear you?
Tack said in a soft, dangerous voice.
You heard me, asshole,
Naomi snapped.
You're telling me I just heard you?
Tack gave her another opportunity to stand down.
You heard me,
she clipped. Another knock came at the door at the exact same time Lainey made her appearance.
What on earth is going on?
She asked from the mouth of the hall, wearing her shimmery, fabulous short kimono, a towel wrapped around her head, her beautiful face and perfect bone structure no less beautiful, with my pale pink terry cloth towel framing it. Naomi looked around Tack at Lainey, then back at Tack, and she shrieked,
Fuck me, you building a harem?
Another knock at the door. Tack's hand wrapped around Naomi's arm, and he yanked her from the door. Stepping back, he threw it open. I peered outside and stared in shock at my favorite aunt, Bette, and favorite uncle, Marshall, who didn't live in Denver. They lived outside D.C. Aunt Bette's eyes were round, and she took in the inhabitants of my living room, her gaze finally resting on me, and I knew she'd heard Naomi, but then again, how could she not?
Surprise?
She asked. And Uncle Marshall pushed in, shoving his wife in with him, as Tack took a couple of steps back, dragging Naomi. Uncle Marsh's eyes also looked around my living room, then found me. Then, just like Uncle Marsh, he grinned his shit-eating grin. There was only one person on this entire earth that could hear a foul-mouthed woman shrieking in his beloved niece's house and find it grin-worthy, and that was my Uncle Marsh. I pulled in breath through my nostrils, tipped my head back to look at the ceiling. Then I looked at Uncle Marsh and grinned back. Chapter 12, Family Reunion.
You might want to step aside,
Tack growled at Aunt Bette and Uncle Marsh. Aunt Bette stared up at him, but Uncle Marsh shuffled Aunt Bette to the side, just as Tack manhandled a struggling, spitting Naomi out the door. He slammed it in her face and locked it, and then he turned to face the room. Pounding came at the door, and Naomi could be heard screaming,
You did not just do that!
With all that was happening, and without having had that first cup of coffee, I was at a loss, but luckily my feet weren't. They took me to Aunt Bette while more pounding sounds came at the door, and I knew, being closer to them, they came from fists and feet. I ignored them, and Aunt Bette, who was staring at the door, jumped when I got close. Hey, Aunt Bette, I murmured and wrapped my arms around her.
Open this goddamn door and send my kids out here,
Naomi yelled.
Hi there, Tyra,
Aunt Bette murmured back, giving me a squeeze. I let her go and smiled at her. Naomi screeched over continued pounding.
Open the fucking door!
I kept ignoring it and turned to Uncle Marsh. Hey, Uncle Marsh. Then I wrapped him in my arms. Uncle Marsh's hug was different than his wife's. My mother's cool-as-hell brother loved me, and he loved me a lot. Therefore, his hug was tight. It was warm, and it spoke volumes, every word beautiful.
Hey, honey, he whispered in my ear.
I said open the motherfucking door!
Naomi shrieked with more hammering. I stepped back, but Uncle Marsh kept me close with his hands on my upper arms. My Aunt Bet was petite, had short curly hair and big blue eyes. Aunt Bet was the kind of aunt who was interested in everything you did, supported every decision you made, wanted nothing but your happiness, and gave love without conditions. She was a call 'em as she saw 'em, did what she liked and liked what she did, said what was on her mind, and if you couldn't hack the honesty, that was your problem kind of person. I adored her. Uncle Marsh looked like a shorter, but way cooler, Kevin Costner. Uncle Marsh got his news from Aunt Bet. Therefore, communication with Uncle Marsh was sporadic, unless you were sitting on his deck, where the last 15 years we had spent the vast amount of our time together. That said, he supported every decision you made, wanted nothing but your happiness, and gave love without conditions. He was also a call him as he saw him, did what he liked, and liked what he did, said what was on his mind kind of guy. But his way was that when he called him, did what he liked, and said what was on his mind, you listened and learned because he was wise, and he wasn't a fan of bullshit. I worshipped him. I'm here for some meetings, Aunt Bet put in over the continued pummeling heard at the door. Your uncle decided to come with me, surprise you, and make it a long weekend with his favorite niece. We thought we'd pop by and take you for breakfast. There was more pounding at the door, and Aunt Bet gamely ignored it. My meetings don't start until this afternoon, then we have the whole weekend. Uncle Marsh let me go, and the minute he did, Tack was there, warm, lean body to my back, tattooed arm curved around my chest. When he did this, I was surprised for a variety of reasons. First, this was a claiming gesture. Second, it was meant to communicate clearly, it was a claiming gesture. Third, it was a claiming gesture that was meant also to communicate togetherness and intimacy. And last, although we had been intimate, that wasn't something I wanted my aunt, and especially my uncle, to know, as I wasn't aware we were together as such, and I wasn't certain how I felt about being claimed. Aunt Bet's and Uncle Marsh's eyes immediately dropped to his arm. Then they shot to my face, and I knew that neither of them missed a single thing Tack was communicating. Aunt Bet's eyes turned openly curious. Uncle Marsh's face wiped blank. Aunt Bet did not judge. She was who she was, and you took her as she was. She returned the favor. Uncle Marsh had been a fighter jock in the Air Force. Now he was a golf pro. He wore Ralph Lauren and Tag Heuer watches. He still had a military haircut. He also didn't judge. That was, I learned in that instant, until a big, badass, scary biker dude with an arm covered in tattoos, wearing faded jeans and a tight tee, needing a haircut and needing it 4 weeks ago, and who Uncle Marsh just witnessed manhandling, a raving woman who assaulted my front door and hurled obscenities at it, curved his painted arm around his much-loved niece's chest. On those occasions, he judged. Oh, boy. Tack's other arm moved in the direction of Aunt Bet.
Kane Allen, his gravelly voice declared.
I blinked, twisted my neck, and looked up at him. Elliot had said that name, and apparently that was Tack's real name. It was a cool name, though I wished he'd given it to me directly.
Hello, Kane. Aunt Bet took his hand and shook. I'm Bet, Tyra's aunt.
Bet, you can call me Tack, he told her.
Her eyes slid to me. Her brows went up, declaring we were going to have a conversation later. But I knew this conversation would be so she could get all the juicy gossip, then spread it widely throughout my extended family, all the way down to the cousins. Unlike Uncle Marsh, Aunt Bet was a communicator. She thought family was the most important thing on earth, and thus made it her mission to be the hub of family information. If you needed to know anything, you asked Aunt Bet, and if she didn't know it, she sure as heck found out. Tack released her, and his hand went to Uncle Marsh. Uncle Marsh studied it. And while Uncle Marsh studied it, he also, I reckoned, was wondering if he should call all his fighter jock buds in order to spirit me away Mach 3. Then he took Tak's hand and shook it.
Marsh, Tyra's uncle, he introduced himself. Right,
Tak replied and let his hand go, stepping us back and to the side.
These are my kids, Tab and Rush.
Yo,
Rush said, coming forward to shake hands.
Hey,
Tabby said, following her brother.
Cool to meet ya. We love Tyra. She's a shit.
Aunt Bet smiled. Uncle Marsh studied Tabby, then Tak. I tried not to feel the warmth sliding through my system at being the shit after meeting Tabby and Rush once. I also failed in not feeling that warmth.
I'm waiting!
Naomi screamed from outside. The hammering at the door had stopped, but apparently she hadn't gone.
This is so cool.
Lainey entered the huddle, and she did this to hug Aunt Bet and Uncle Marsh while gushing.
Ty-Ty talks about you guys all the time. Says if she wasn't related to you, she would have launched an investigation at the hospital to see if she was switched at birth. It's awesome to finally meet you.
Lainey stepped back and smiled brightly at them. Aunt Bet smiled back at her. Uncle Marsh directed another shit-eating grin at me. Lainey wasn't lying. I loved my mom and dad, but all evidence except the existence of Uncle Marsh pointed to there being a mix-up at the hospital. My mom and dad were Republicans. My mom and dad were religious. My mom and dad were both born in Ohio. They vacationed in Ohio State Parks. They considered themselves seasoned travelers because they'd been to Cooperstown in the Indy 500. They cheered for the Buckeyes. Their TV room was decorated in red, gray, and white. And last, they intended to die in Ohio, and I knew this because they told me so. My mom had a successful career as a housewife. She baked fabulous pies and listened to show tunes and gospel. My dad had a successful career as a cabinet maker. He ate mom's fabulous pies and bragged about them to all and sundry. And he watched football, cop shows, and action movies. The more bad guys blown up or filled with holes, the better. Even at my age, my mom still lectured me that women should wear skirts, heels, never leave the house without makeup and earrings, and lamented often, through every means available, including phone, letters, emails, and during visits, the fact that I had yet to give her grandchildren. My dad lectured me that I spent too much time working and socializing, not the right kind. The right kind being at church mixers, where I would find myself a good religious boy who liked football and God and had a job where he worked with his hands. And that I should find that boy and make sure his handkerchiefs were all so perfectly ironed. This, as well as keeping a clean house and my boy in meat and potatoes, being my only reasons to exist. My mom and dad had somehow managed to get thrown back to the 50s. They liked it, stayed there, and as with the great state of Ohio, they were never, ever leaving. My mom and dad were nothing like me. Suffice it to say that if it was not Aunt Bet and Uncle Marsh in my living room at that very moment, while Tak still had his tattooed arm around me, and it was my mom and dad, things would be going very differently. Aunt Bet and Uncle Marsh had the ability to hold their tongues and act with decorum. Mom would be tight-faced. Dad would be asking Tak to have a chat on my deck, where he would explain I was a good girl, and probably go into detail about how he felt about tattoos, and the importance of regular grooming, and the only grooming that was acceptable left your hair in a buzz cut and not a single whisker on your face. Then Tak would likely refuse Dad's demand that he never have anything to do with me ever again. And finally, Dad would promptly go to the nearest gun shop and buy a shotgun, because Dad might be religious, but he had no aversion to firearms. I forced my mind from these reflections and introduced Lainey to my aunt and uncle. This is Lainey, my best friend.
Nice to meet you, Aunt Bet said. Tyrus told me about you, too. All of it good.
Lainey beamed. Uncle Marsh transferred his shit-eating grin to Lainey.
Family reunion! Awesome! Tabby cried. And you're here just in time. You don't have to go out to breakfast with Tyra. Dad's making his world-famous pancakes.
Both Aunt Bet and Uncle Marsh turned eyes to Tak. And even Uncle Marsh couldn't hide that he was startled at the idea of a scary biker dude making pancakes.
Reminds me, I gotta get that done because I got shit to do.
Tak rumbled from behind me, still not having let me go.
Tabby, darling, get these folks a cup of joe. Rush, plates, forks, set Red's table.
His arms gave me a squeeze, and his mouth came to my ear, where he said quietly, but I knew my aunt and uncle could hear,
"She'll go away and I'll deal with her. She doesn't, and you see her again, you call me. She is not your problem, baby, yeah?"
"Yeah," I said quietly back. That got me another arm squeeze. He let me go, and I felt his heat leave my back as he sauntered to the kitchen.
"I have to go finish my shower," Lainey announced. "All that ruckus. I jumped out and I still have conditioner in my hair. I'll be back."
Then she whirled around and raced down the hall to the bathroom where she disappeared behind the closed door. I turned to my aunt and uncle, finding myself alone in the living room with them.
"Seems you missed some things in your last email," Aunt Bet remarked.
I bit my lip. Aunt Bet grinned. Uncle Marsh looked at his shoes.
"How do you guys take your coffee?"
Tabby called from the kitchen.
"Milk, 2 sugars, Aunt Bet called back, moving toward the kitchen. Uncle Marsh looked at me.
"Deck, explanation, first chance you got," he ordered quietly.
"Okie dokie," I whispered. His hazel eyes bored into mine. Then he looked away and started toward the kitchen. I sucked in breath. Naomi shouted through the door,
"Fuck you! Fuck all of you!"
Damn. Chapter 13. No.
"Spill," Aunt Bet demanded while slapping hangers on a rack in Nordstrom. I had escaped the Uncle Marsh chat on my deck because my day had started as mayhem and descended into bedlam. Tack made pancakes for 5 people and Rush was again right. They were fantastic. Definitely better than his fajitas, and his fajitas were spectacular. So his pancakes being better made them silver dollar miracles. Then he took Rush and Tabby out on my back deck and talked to them for 5 minutes with this culminating in Rush shouting,
"Fuck yeah!"
and Tabby squealing in delight, rushing inside, looking at me and yelling,
"Guess what, Tyra? We're moving in with Dad!"
Then she threw her hands up in the air with fingers in devil's horns and screeched nonsensically. I had some concerns about this announcement, mostly due to a fact that a judge usually decided something like that in a courtroom with lawyers in attendance. Not Kane Tack Allen deciding it on my back deck with only his kids in attendance. But it wasn't my business, so I just smiled at Tabby and returned her big hug when she gave me one. Then Tack announced he had to go. He did a bunch of chin lifts, but approached me in my chair at my dining table, fisted a hand in my hair, tugged my head gently back, and laid a long, wet one on me in front of my aunt and uncle, my best friend, and his children. I scowled in his face after he was done, and after I recovered, to which he muttered to me,
"Wherever the fuck I want, Red,"
gave my hair a playful tug, and then he was gone. I luckily could avoid the variety of looks I was getting from my audience because Elliot took that moment to call Lainey, and she took that opportunity to give him a piece of her mind. She did this loudly, for a long time, and while alternately pacing and stomping through my living room, kitchen, and up and down the hall. Therefore, conversation was difficult, but Tabby found the opportunity to explain to my aunt and uncle, when she could be heard, that the raving redhead in my living room earlier was her mother. Tabby also found the opportunity to go into detail about how she felt about her mother, and further how gleeful she was moving in with her father. My aunt had to go to her meetings, and my uncle had a tea time at the Wiltshire, because I might be his favorite niece, and we hadn't seen each other for a while, but he didn't miss the opportunity to golf. We made plans to meet up later for shopping with Aunt Bet, while Uncle Marsh recovered from golf by drinking in the clubhouse, and then later, dinner. Rush and Tabby left soon after Aunt Bet and Uncle Marsh. I got ready to face the day, and while I did this, Lainey decided she was moving in with me until she figured out what she was going to do. I didn't mind this, but it took a while because while she was packing at her place, she frequently stopped to take calls from, or make calls to, Elliot, where she yelled at him loudly or sobbed hysterically. We finally got her packed and moved in with me, whereupon it was time to go pick up Aunt Bet and go to Cherry Creek Mall, where Uncle Marsh rarely missed an opportunity to golf, Aunt Bet rarely missed an opportunity to shop. Which brought me to now, in Nordstrom,
with Lainey and Aunt Bet.
Spill what?
I asked, though I knew exactly what. Aunt Bet's big blue eyes hit me. She knew I knew. Aunt Bet also wasn't a big fan of bullshit. I bit my lip.
Are you talking about Tack?
Lainey asked. And Aunt Bet nodded to her and looked back to me.
Let's start with that. Who's called Tack and why?
I slapped some hangers on the rack and replied, Tack's called Tack and I don't know why.
His kids are in your kitchen and he sticks his tongue down your throat as a goodbye and you don't know why he's called Tack?
Aunt Bet asked, her eyebrows to her hairline. I mumbled.
He's her boss,
Lainey shared at this juncture. Aunt Bet's eyes got huge as her brows stayed glued to her hairline and her gaze stayed glued to me. I repeated, and Aunt Bet tipped her head to the side in a go-on gesture. I knew I had her undivided attention because she was standing in front of a rack of clothes at Nordstrom and paying no attention to it, but I had nothing more to give. She looked back at the rack and started slapping hangers, but I knew she wasn't looking at the clothes.
Your uncle and I understood your need to check out, Tyra. Sometimes in people's lives they need to check out, but I gotta tell you, your uncle isn't fired up about how you're checking back in.
She slapped a hanger across the rack.
The tattoos he could handle.
Hanger cracking.
The needing a haircut he could handle.
Another hanger cracking.
The grown kids he could handle.
Another hanger went.
The grown kids cursing freely without him saying a word he could handle.
There was another hanger crash.
The hot and heavy makeout session as a goodbye in front of your uncle and Tack's kids, he could handle.
And yet another hanger.
Even his ex shouting the house down, he could handle.
No hanger, as her eyes cut to me.
All of that together?
She shook her head.
No.
Things are confusing right now, Aunt Bet, I said quietly, and Aunt Bet's gaze grew sharp.
I see this,
she replied, hesitated, then finished, clearly.
I like him,
Lainey announced, pulling out a top and holding it down her front as I stared at her in shock.
I think he's lush.
I thought you wanted me to give notice, I said to her. She stopped looking down at the top and looked at me.
I did, until he made me pancakes. Now I think he's lush.
That feeling I had that morning swept through me as Aunt Bet muttered, Gotta say, those pancakes are definitely in the plus category. I started slapping hangers, declaring, I can't talk about this.
Why?
Aunt Bet asked. I stopped slapping hangers and looked at her.
Because I don't know what to think about it. He's a complicated man. There's too much going on with him and just with me. And all of it is happening fast.
One day, I knew where my life was heading. The minute I woke up, I knew what I would be facing. 2.5 months ago, I changed that. And now I don't know what I'm doing, where I'm heading. All I know is wherever it is, I have to get there. And as for Tack, he can be... I stopped, then started again. A lot of things. Some of them are good, really good. Some of them are bad, really bad.
What's bad? Aunt Bet asked.
I shrugged and started moving hangers. He's unlike any man I've ever met. He takes bossy to an extreme. I've never experienced anything like it, I answered.
And he has multiple personalities. He can be extremely gentle, thoughtful, warm. Then he can get angry, and it's scary. Then he can, I don't know, disappear. He's there, we work together for the most part, but he's not.
Has he ever handled you the way he handled his ex? Aunt Bet asked quietly, and I took in a soft breath. Then I admitted, If he wants your attention, he finds a way to get it. Aunt Bet's eyes flashed, and I hurriedly went on. But it isn't exactly the same. She's a crazy woman, and she makes his life a living hell, and their kids. You heard it, but what you saw is constant for him, and they've been divorced for 4 years. And he said he'd never hurt me, and he never has, not that way. He promised that. He said he'd rather cut off his own arm than ever hurt me.
He said that to you?
Lainey asked. Yeah, I answered.
Wow,
she whispered. Then she looked at Aunt Bet.
He strikes me as a man of his word.
Aunt Bet looked at Lainey, then murmured,
Well, that's 2 in the plus category, not exactly batting 1,000.
Oh, boy. I heard chiming coming from Aunt Bet's purse. She opened it, pulled out her phone, and hit some buttons. Then she hit some more while saying, "That's Marsh. He's done communing with the golfing brotherhood, and he's hungry. I need to feed my husband. He says he's at a place called Club, and he already has a martini. If we don't get there soon, he's ordering." She hit one last button, and I sighed a relieved sigh that this particular conversation was over, for now. She dropped the phone in her purse and looked up at me. "Is this Club place close?"
"Yes, just outside the mall," I answered.
"But we have to drive there, seeing as I'm wearing heels, and they have really cool cocktail glasses, so it's likely a taxi night anyway. Since you have one cocktail in a really cool glass, you have to have 7, Lainey explained.
This was totally true, and this also obviously worked perfectly fine for Aunt Bet, for she nodded once, then said, "Let's roll," as a reply. With no other choice, since when Uncle Marsh was hungry, everyone ate, even I knew that, we left our rack and headed to the parking garage. We motored through it toward my car since Uncle Marsh had their rental. I headed to the driver's side, Lainey to the passenger side back because Aunt Bet's legs were shorter than mine, and Aunt Bet to the passenger front. I'd bleeped the locks, doors were opening all around, when suddenly, and with no warning, I saw nothing but black. My body went solid in shocked surprise, and I heard a scuffle right before I opened my mouth to scream. But not a sound came out, because I stopped seeing black when everything went black. Chapter 14. MacGyvering. As I lay on my side on a floor in the dark with my hands bound behind my back, my ankles also bound together, instead of freaking out and visualizing all the possibilities that would bring about what might be my imminent torture, violation, and death, I took this time to reflect on why I had never married and why I fell in love with Tack over tequila and sex. I did this because I wanted to think about Tack, who was big and he was strong and he made me feel safe when he wasn't making me feel unsafe. But mostly he made me feel alive. If there was nothing else to be said about Kane Tack Allen, he made me feel alive. Every minute I spent with him from his initial, "Hey," to when he kissed me hard and wet and long before he left me that morning, I felt tingling. I felt excitement. I felt fear. I felt pleasure. I felt warmth and I felt anger. I laughed. I wanted to yell so badly it made me want to explode. I wanted to cry so badly it hurt not to do it. And I'd been 100% alive through all of it. What I did not want to think about was where Lainey and Aunt Bet were, because they were not with me. And also I did not want to think about where I was, and further I did not think of why I might be there. And lastly, I did not think about what might become of me, because I was worried that what might become of me was that I wouldn't be alive anymore. Instead, I forced my mind to Tack, a man who was not perfect. But he'd seemed that way when I met him. He was everything my mind had made up in my daydreams of the man I wanted to be mine since I was 14 and started having them. He was handsome. He was strong. He had a beautiful voice and an even more beautiful laugh. And he laughed a lot. He had a light touch, and he had a sweet touch, and he had a sexy touch. He drank tequila like it was water, and ate roasted hog sandwiches like they tasted as good as the finest filet mignon. And when I had his attention, I had all of it. That night at the chaos party, he made me feel like I was the only one there. He made me feel funny and interesting and beautiful. And when he took me to his bed, he made me feel a lot of other things that were even better. It felt like all my life I'd been living in black and white and didn't realize it, and suddenly, across a rowdy biker party, I saw this man and the world filled with vibrant color. It didn't leach in slowly. It slammed in with a kapow. I didn't know that was what I was looking for. I just knew I wasn't going to settle for anything less. Not anything less than perfect. I was going to find the man of my daydreams, and nothing else would do. So I never got married because I never found him. No one ever brought that color into my life. Until Tack. And lying on my side in the dark, bound, I realized that color shot back through my life every time he was filling it. It muted and trickled away when he didn't, but it would burst out bright and beautiful the minute he came into my space. After all these years, I finally was alive, and now I feared I was going to die. Tears filled my eyes only moments before I heard the door open, and then I heard a thud. I instinctively knew what that thud was. It was a body hitting the floor. I tensed, and the door slammed. "Who's there?" I called into the darkness. "Tyra?" Aunt Bet replied. "Thank you, God." "Aunt Bet," I started squirming toward her voice. "Are you okay?" "No, I'm not okay. We've been kidnapped, and Marsh is drinking martinis and probably flirting with the waitress," she snapped. And it sounded like she, too, was moving, but not in my direction. This was likely true. Uncle Marsh flirted. It was harmless. But he was hot. Hot guys did this, even if they were taken. Aunt Bet knew there was no one for him but her, and he never flirted where the flirtee would get any sense it was going anywhere. But he was a good-looking man. It was pure instinct to keep those skills sharp. And anyway, Aunt Bet had been shopping. Uncle Marsh would probably have a 3-course dinner and 4 martinis before he worried where we'd gotten to. "What happened? Where were you?" I asked. "I was in a room tied to a chair where they asked me questions about an Elliot Belova. They thought I was Lainey's mother. Do not ask me why. A, I don't look a thing like Lainey, and B, I'm not old enough to be Lainey's mother," she stated, sounding more than slightly perturbed. And I had to admit, since her A and B were very true, and she'd been tied to a chair, she had a right. "Elliot is Lainey's fiancé, or was until last night," I informed her as I stopped moving and listened to her continuing to do it. "I think I got that from her shouting it to him 15 times on the phone this morning," Aunt Bet returned. "Right," I muttered. "What's he into?" she asked. "Well, according to Tack, the better question is to ask what he isn't into," I answered. "Is Tack involved in this?" "Not until Elliot involved him by asking him to whack the top man in the Russian mob," I explained, then hurriedly finished. "He refused, of course." "Of course," Aunt Bet muttered, still moving around. "What are you doing?" I asked. "So we're dealing with the Russian mob here?" she asked back instead of answered. "I don't know," I answered. "They had Russian accents," she told me. "Then yes," I replied, thinking that was a good guess. "Not good," she whispered and kept moving around. "Aunt Bet, what are you doing?" "Trying to find something sharp to cut through these restraints." I fell silent. I did this because Aunt Bet had also been in the Air Force. That was how Uncle Marsh met her. This was before she retired. And she did this early, then took a contract job working for the Air Force. She told me what she did, but it always confused me. She talked in a lot of acronyms like TDY and PCC and FIGMO. I didn't speak Air Force acronyms, so I never knew what she was on about. It sounded like a desk job. She boiled it down to human resources. But I always got the sense that she likely wasn't filing away performance evaluations, because I'd visited her office before. And after she retired, and seen how people were around her, there was respect, and there was the respect people gave Aunt Bet. I also fell silent, because Aunt Bet had been in an avalanche. No joke. She'd lucked out and had an air pocket once the snow stopped covering her. She also picked the right direction to dig. Further, she used Aunt Bet's secret skills to find every other member of her skiing party and dug them out, too. It took hours, but she didn't stop. She had everyone out and even splinted someone who broke their leg before the rescue people found them. She made the papers. It was big news. And there was the fact that she was in the Air Force at all. The Air Force didn't attract wusses. Therefore, I had a feeling Aunt Bet was thinking of taking on the Russian mob. I finally ended my silence. "Why are you doing that?" "To get us out." "Oh, boy." "Maybe we should wait until Uncle Marsh figures out we're not coming and raises an alarm," I suggested. "Or maybe someone saw us being abducted from the parking garage and called the police." "Tyra, this is the Russian mob." Yes, I know, which is why I think maybe we shouldn't cause a ruckus and make them angry.
We won't make them angry, she assured me, though I wasn't feeling assured.
Well, I'm thinking they went to all that trouble to kidnap us. We try to escape.
That won't make them happy, I returned.
Excellent, she whispered excitedly. I think I found an exposed nail.
Oh, boy. I heard her sawing away at the plastic restraints and tried to push up to sitting, saying, What about Lainey?
We'll get her before we go.
I got to my bottom and stared in the direction of my aunt's voice. You mean rescue, then escape?
Of course,
she replied like I was a dim bulb.
Aunt Bet, I hissed. We don't know where we are. We have no weapons.
I'll figure something out.
Wonderful. Visions of Aunt Bet MacGyvering an explosive with that exposed nail, some lint from her pocket, and spit filled my head just as the door opened quickly and shut just as quickly. I went still, and I heard nothing but booted feet moving on the floor. Aunt Bet had wisely stopped sawing away at the plastic restraints.
You're safe, a deep voice growled. I'm Hawk. I'm getting you out of here. Be quiet, be smart, and do what I say. Yeah?
Oh, thank God. Since he told us to be quiet, and he sounded like he knew what he was doing as well as a little scary, I was debating whether or not to answer with a yeah when Aunt Bet said, Plastic restraints, wrists, and ankles. I heard movement, more movement, some more. Then I felt strong fingers close on my wrist, then both were free. Movement at my side, and then my ankles were free. Hallelujah! I rubbed my wrists and heard Aunt Bet ask, Do you have an extra weapon?
This is gonna go quiet. No heroes, especially not ones who don't know what the fuck they're doing.
Aunt Bet replied with,
I know you. J.T.F. Abel Promise. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Bet Mansfield, retired.
Silence for a beat, then,
Right.
There was more movement. Then I heard the sounds I heard on TV when people were fiddling with a gun. Oh boy, I had a feeling the dude called Hawk spoke Air Force acronym, but I didn't know if this was good or bad.
You good?
Hawk asked.
Talk to me, Aunt Bet ordered, sounding curt, bossy, and scarily like she knew exactly what she was doing.
Oh boy.
Neutralize the boys outside. No guard on this door. Two boys on the first floor. Two with your girl, who's on the second floor.
Oh, God, what were they doing to Lainey?
You have backup? Aunt Bet asked.
Called it. The boys we're dealing with couldn't wait. Right now it's just me. Plan is, I get you out safe. I go back for the girl. My backup should be here by then.
Works for me, Aunt Bet stated.
It doesn't work for me, I butted in. We need to get Lainey.
Quiet, Hawk ordered.
No, seriously, this is the Russian mob. They might be...
My mouth was covered with a big hand, and how he hit the target with such accuracy in the dark was beyond me.
Quiet,
he growled, took his hand away and ordered,
Everyone up, let's go.
I pushed myself to my feet, feeling achy and stiff from being tied up and lying on the floor for so long, but I didn't take the time to stretch. The door opened, and I felt Aunt Bet grab my hand. She pulled me out the door into a dark, unlit hall. We walked about 5 feet, then I heard Aunt Bet whisper, Stairs, right before I tripped up the first couple of them. I righted my footing and moved up the stairs. Hawk opened a door, and late evening sun showed through. It also showed on Hawk, who was tall, built, dark-haired, wearing a skin-tight gray tee and black cargo pants, and if I hadn't seen all the gorgeousness that was Tack, our rescuer, would be far and away the most handsome man I'd laid eyes on in my life. One word. Hot. As hot as he was also carrying a gun, surveying the area outside the door, giving us a nod, and moving forward agilely and alertly. Aunt Bet had a gun, too. And Lainey was somewhere with two of the bad guys, so I had no time to appreciate how hot he was. Aunt Bet gave me a head gesture that told me to precede her. I did, following Hawk. We made it through the room, out the door, and across a lawn with no incident. We stopped under a long, very tall, solid fence. He looked down at me.
I'll give you a lift up,
You're going to have to pull yourself over, drop down to the other side, soft knees when you land, fall to your side immediately and roll out of the way.
He didn't say, yeah, to ask if I got it. He just linked his hands and bent, so I was guessing time was of the essence. Therefore, I didn't hesitate. I put my hands to his shoulders and my foot in his hands. I had misgivings about this, mostly because I had limited upper body strength, so I had the feeling there was no way I was going to be able to pull myself over that tall fence. I didn't have to worry. Hawk didn't give me a lift up. He gave me a lift up. Well past his waist, straight to his shoulders, boosting me with such strength and speed, he nearly hurled me over the wall. I was on my belly on the wall before I knew it. I swung my legs around and dropped down, soft knees, fell to my side, and rolled. Wow. Easy. Not 2 seconds later, Aunt Bet followed me, doing the same thing, except hers was practiced, thus cooler, like it wasn't the first time she did it, or the second. I was thinking I now had proof Aunt Bet had secret ways, when she grabbed my hand and pulled me aside as Hawk followed her. Then he moved, and we moved with him. The fence ran along the side of a sleepy road, sleepy as in no traffic. There was a black SUV some ways away from where we jumped over the fence. Hawk bleeped the locks. I went to the passenger side back. Aunt Bet to the front passenger seat.
Down. No one sees you, Hawk ordered.
Copy that, but do you have a secure phone? I need to call my husband, Aunt Bet replied.
Glove compartment,
Hawk answered, turned, and through the gathering darkness another commando showed. Hispanic, shorter, and leaner than Hawk. He didn't speak. Hawk nodded to him, turned, and nodded to Aunt Bet. His eyes sliced through me, and then he and the other commando moved away. I scrambled into the SUV. So did Aunt Bet. I got low. So did Aunt Bet. I heard her searching the glove box. I heard beeping noises. Then I heard her talking to Uncle Marsh. But all I thought about was Lainey. I was safe now. I was breathing. I was unhurt. The same with Aunt Bet. I just hoped with all I had that when our rescuers returned with Lainey, they'd do it in one piece, and she'd be in the same condition. Then I was going to hunt down Elliot, my own damned self, and wring his neck. Tyra, Aunt Bet called when she beeped off the phone. Yeah, I whispered. It's gonna be okay, she whispered back. I bit my lip. Then I said, I'm sorry, Aunt Bet. You didn't kidnap me and tie me to a chair. This was true. We fell silent. Several minutes later, the door opposite me opened, and Hawk deposited Lainey in the seat. I twisted and looked up at her, automatically reaching out to grab her hand. You okay? I asked. No. Her voice trembled. Oh, God. Did they hurt you? I asked. No. Her voice trembled more. Honey, I started. But Hawk was folding in the driver's seat, and he interrupted me. Debrief later, he ordered, started up the car, and we took off. I wanted to ask who he was, how he knew we were there, and why he'd rescued us. But he scared me a little bit, seeing as he obviously wasn't the police, and entered an uncertain situation somewhat heavily armed. Not to mention, he could scale a 12-foot wall without anyone giving him a leg up. Since I figured Aunt Bet knew what she was doing, and she also kept her silence, I followed suit and held Lainey's hand squeezing tight. She didn't squeeze tight back, and I heard a hitch in her breath, so I knew she was crying. I bit my lip again. That was when I heard it, the familiar roar of Harley's. I turned and looked out the back window as I heard Hawk mutter, "What the fuck?" I was right. Harley's, and a lot of them. I saw a tack up front, and it took everything I had not to cry out with joy or burst into relieved tears. He'd been coming for me. Maybe he was the perfect man.
One of you belonged to Chaos? Hawk asked.
I think that would be me, I answered. Aunt Bet twisted her neck and looked at me through the two front seats. From her look, I was seeing that during our Nordstrom talk, I probably should have told her Tack was the president of a motorcycle club. However, I didn't expect us all to be kidnapped and then have Tack, and what looked like the entire club, come to my rescue after an unknown commando rescued us, that was. I looked out the windows and saw the Harleys overtaking the SUV, three bikes closing in at the front, two positioning on each side of the SUV, more at the back. I saw brake lights on the Harleys that held Tack, Brick, and Dog in front of us, all of them coming on simultaneously as if they had biker brainwave synchronicity.
Fuck, Hawk muttered on an annoyed growl.
Then he slowed and moved the narrow shoulder. He didn't try to evade them. He just stopped, commanded, "Don't move," into the cab, and knifed out. I watched as he met Tack in front of the SUV. There was a boot-to-boot, nose-to-nose conversation that didn't look happy. Then Tack's head jerked to the SUV. Hawk's head turned, and he looked our way. Then he lifted his chin, and Tack instantly moved away from him, prowling to my side. I had my hand on the door handle, but before I could open it, it was opened for me. Then I found myself yanked out to my feet. The door was slammed, and I was shoved back against it. I lifted my eyes to his face, about to throw my arms around his shoulders and maybe dissolve into tears, or perhaps declare that I was falling in love with him again, because he turned my world to color. And he'd been coming for me when his hand weirdly lifted to wrap around the front of my throat, like he was preparing to strangle me, and all movement and declarations of love died at this aggressive gesture.
"They touch you?"
he barked, his tone sharp with what I belatedly saw on his face. Rage. I shook my head, fighting the urge to shrink back. "No, not really. They just hooded me, made me go unconscious, bound me and put me in a room. They did something to Lainey, though." With a quickness that stunned me, he let me go, jerked his head at Dog, who was standing beside him, and then I watched him round the back of the SUV. Dog had hold of me by my upper arm and was dragging me toward his bike, but I had my head turned, and I watched Tack open Lainey's door and yank her out.
What?
Dog tugged me to a stop by his bike and threw a leg over it.
"Climb on," he ordered.
I kept staring at Tack, who was now dragging Lainey to his bike. Why was he dragging Lainey to his bike? Brick or Dog could take care of Lainey. Tack was supposed to take care of me, wasn't he? I mean, just that morning he declared me his woman, didn't he?
"Cherry, climb on,"
Dog repeated. But I couldn't tear my eyes away from Tack, who was already on his bike, and Lainey, who was climbing on behind him.
"Cherry!"
I looked back at the SUV in time to see Hawk driving away with Aunt Bet, who was giving me a sharp look, incongruously mixed with a finger wave.
"Hey," I whispered, feeling the need to say something like, "thanks," to Hawk, or, "where the hell are you taking my aunt?" but not able to get anything more out, and not knowing what the hell was happening.
"Cherry, get your ass on my bike,"
Dog demanded. My head swung back just in time to see Tack, with Lainey on his bike, arms tight around his middle, cheek to his shoulder, take off on a roar. Bile filled my throat.
"Cherry?"
My eyes sliced to Dog.
"Right," I murmured.
Then I climbed on the back of Dog's bike.